Welcome to the Issue Is podcast on a week where we're releasing three separate podcasts. This podcast is with conservative commentator Dave Rubin. He used to be on the left, then moved more towards the right. We talked to him a couple years ago when he was living in L.A., when he debated Gloria Allred on our show, and he moved to Florida. We haven't had him on since, and now he's back on the show to talk about moving to Florida, to talk about immigration, to talk about Biden versus Trump, the VP search, and a lot about Governor Newsom. It's a very interesting conversation. He's got a very strong point of view, and here it is, Dave Rubin.
Now the perspective of one of the most popular conservative voices in the country. Dave Rubin hosts The Rubin Report, which is live every weekday at 8 a.m. Pacific time on Rumble, YouTube, and Locals. Dave, welcome back to The Issue Is.
It's good to be with you. I used to be just an old school liberal, but I guess these days that makes you a conservative. I'll take it.
Okay. Of course, one of the big stories of the week is President Biden's executive action on immigration. Some on the left, including Senator Alex Padilla, says it's too harsh and might not be legal. What say you?
Well, look, you know, Andrew Breitbart was famous for a phrase, which is that politics is downstream from culture. And one of the things that I've been saying lately is that everything is downstream from immigration. Whatever the issue is that you care about, whether it's abortion or taxes or school choice or whatever it might be, unless we have a border where you cannot just walk through, as you are showing these videos right next to me right now, where you can't just walk through, you can't just claim asylum, you can't just say, I'm here for whatever reason I'm here, and we have no idea who you are, what your values are, what your culture is, or what your intentions are, or whether you've brought drugs with you, whether you intend on being a criminal or whatever else. Unless we have a border, you don't have a country. Now, it's interesting because that's something that a certain orange man was saying an awful lot of in 2015, and everyone was calling him racist for it. But if you look at where we are at right now, after the three plus years of a Biden administration, where somewhere between 7 and 10 million illegals have come, if we're to believe any of these numbers, most people do now realize you cannot have this. You know, why is it that in all of these videos that you're showing right here, all of the people are almost exclusively 20 to, say, 35 or 40-year-old men? These are not the immigrants of your ancestors or my great-grandparents, the poor and the tired and the huddled masses who were coming here fleeing something with their, you know, there were women, there were old women and children and everything else. And by the way, even in those cases, you still have to do it legally. So it is really a shame that the Biden administration has led us down this path, because I think we basically in America right now are where most of Western Europe was 10 years ago. And if Germany and the UK and France and Belgium and Spain and some of these other countries, if they could turn back the clock and have had closed their borders 10 years ago, or at least dealt with it in some sort of transparent, honest way, they would have done that. And they're dealing with much bigger problems now.
Do you think the Republicans bear any responsibility for this in terms of not passing that bipartisan immigration form that it appears that Donald Trump told them not to pass?
No, they bear responsibility in that, you know, Democrats are pretty terrible, but Republicans are also kind of terrible. But the bipartisan bill was a complete farce. I mean, there is no law that needs to be passed to control the border. The President of the United States has the authority to close the border immediately. He rescinded 60 some odd executive actions that Trump put in as it related to the border in his first week in office. And right this very moment, he could close the border if he wants. The proof, by the way, is that now he is basically signing this executive order to allow, what is it, 2,500 people in a day, and then they'll close it after that. I mean, even that sounds somewhat illegal. Okay, 2,500 people can break the law, and then we'll close it after that. But the point is, they could have stopped this entire time. So the bipartisan deal, generally when they say bipartisan, it just means that everyone gets screwed. We didn't need any more laws as it pertains to the border. We have a border with Canada and a border with Mexico. We are different countries than those countries, thus the border. So you can close the border. It's one of the very few things that the federal government is supposed to do. So I don't blame Republicans for not signing a completely farcical, money-wasting bill. I blame Republicans, I would say slightly to a lesser extent than I blame Democrats, but generally they're not great on this stuff either. But that has nothing to do with the bill, which was just, we were just being sold a completely faulty bill of goods.
You know, it's really interesting where we're at in this presidential race. We're about a month out from the debate. We had President Trump's conviction, which doesn't seem to really shake up the race that much at all in terms of the polls. Where do you see the state of the presidential race? You think Trump's ahead?
Well, I mean, look, the polls show Trump ahead a little bit. I think Biden has huge, huge problems right now. Just in the last couple of days, you know, it's bursting forth more about some of the cognitive stuff. And, you know, even Wall Street Journal wrote a piece basically saying people are starting to realize something's not quite right with him. We're seeing him wander off. All of his interviews are extremely packaged and edited. He has notes. Everyone has seen all of that. I don't even have to go into that anymore. Then people look at the border. And I think the border really is becoming the number one issue of the day. And people blame that on Biden, as well they should, by the way. And then I think, you know, there's obvious economic problems. We also have a war in Ukraine that's, you know, kind of a war, not war. There's problems in the Middle East, which we didn't have under Trump. So people are basically looking at the set of issues that exist and saying, hey, things were kind of better under Trump. You need only look at, you know, the price of, say, a pound of beef or a dozen eggs to realize that the economic situation is not great. I know the markets are doing quite well, but what really matters to most people is when they go to the grocery store, they go to a restaurant, and when they come back with a bill that just makes no sense, then they think something's wrong. So I would say most of the energy right now, largely fueled by this, what I would say is a ridiculous conviction of Donald Trump, a conviction of which most people have no idea what he's been convicted for. And no one has ever been convicted of anything like this before. And I assure you, no one in New York will again. I think that's adding a lot of momentum to his side. I mean, you can see it now. Suddenly there's rappers and athletes and podcasters, none of whom are traditional conservatives or Republicans, suddenly saying they're glad to vote for Trump or they're going to loudly support Trump. I don't see really any loud, proud support of Joe Biden. Yes, I would say the MSNBC pundit class loves Joe Biden, but I don't know where the average support is. I mean, Joe Biden, if he was to hold a rally, who would show up besides Joe Scarborough on MSNBC? I don't know.
And I don't know if they love Joe Biden. They just really hate Donald Trump, and he's the alternative they see right now. Who do you think Donald Trump should pick as VP?
You know, I think you can argue it a couple of ways. Look, as I said at the top, you know, I still consider myself a classical liberal, which was more in line with the Democrats of old, say the JFKs or the Daniel Patrick Moynihans, Ed Koch, that when Democrats were more moderate and that there was some utility for the state. Now, unfortunately, the progressives have so wrecked that version of being what a Democrat is or what a liberal is, that I now, even though I have the same beliefs, I now have more in cause with the Republican Party. What I would say to Donald Trump, if he was listening, is, hey, there are an awful lot of ex-Democrats or begrudging Democrats like me, especially post-October 7th and seeing all of the craziness on college campuses. And again, to the backdrop of immigration and the rest of it, there's an awful lot of people that are willing to not vote for Democrats anymore. So Trump has to widen the net. So if you want to widen the net, what do you have to do? Well, you don't go to the base, right? So to me, a guy like J.D. Vance, who I know is very popular at the base, I happen to like him. I think he's a fine senator, but that doesn't widen the base. I think what you have to do is you have to find someone, maybe an ex-Democrat. How about somebody like former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who ran for president as a Democrat, who now publicly has left the Democrat Party, who's fighting all of the right fights and really is a moderate, who's, I would say, adjusting to maybe a little more of a conservative position on some things, say like guns or something like that. I think that offers you the widest tent. I think perhaps more likely it's more of a traditional conservative, maybe like a Marco Rubio or even Nikki Haley. But whatever he does, it's just, you've just got to widen the net as much as possible. And I suspect that's what he's going to do. I don't see how you just go right to the base.
Yeah, and when Tulsi Gabbard was here on our set, she said she would be happy to do it and would be happy to serve. Yeah. That would certainly be interesting. I know you talked to her as well. We also know that you used to be here, but you left California for Florida, frustrated by Governor Newsom and the regulations. You're a big supporter of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. We've got some video of the two of you on stage together. I know you backed him for president, although you said that you'd be happy with Trump at the time. You've seen DeSantis and Newsom go back and forth. We saw their debate. For you personally, for our California audience, why is Florida better for you?
Oh, wow. There's so much. How long do we have, my friend? I mean, look, the easiest answer, and it's the most cliche answer, but it's not the real answer, is the taxes, right? We have no state income tax here. So suddenly I'm saving about 12% that I was giving to California and getting very little in return. You're not going to believe this, but we still have roads here. We largely have the best school system in the entire country right now. I think U.S. News and World Report just said Florida schools are number one. We have great policing. We have law and order. If a group of Hamas supporters try to take over a road here, unlike California, where they can shut down the exit to LAX, when they tried to do it here, they tried to do it once, and they were all arrested within 11 minutes. We have a completely different culture here, a culture that is based in freedom and in individual rights, and what I would say America was really founded upon. You know, unfortunately, California, which was once the dream of the nation, go west, go find your dreams, and many, many people did it for many generations. It has now become, as you know, a one-party state. The cities, I don't have to tell you what's going on in Los Angeles. I used to live it for a portion of it. I lived in West Hollywood. It's a ghost town right now. I lived in the valley in the second portion of my time in LA, and that's not the same either. You know, Ventura was largely destroyed during the Summer of Love riots. It's just not the same. You know, they've taxed people to the point that everybody that has a little bit of money wants to get out. And then you know what happens is that the people that leave, they end up coming to Florida, bringing their resources. I brought two businesses here, several employees, everybody's flourishing. And that's fundamentally the difference. Again, it's not about finances. It's about a culture of freedom, because when the government gets out of your way so that you can live the way you see fit, you start being happier. And then when you're happier, you know what? Your spouse is a little happier. The people that are around you in your community are a little happier. You might be more inclined to pick up some trash or not burn down a Pep Boys because you don't like something that happened on the news. And that really is the difference. And as long as you guys are showing the B-roll there of Newsom and DeSantis, I would say, although DeSantis's campaign obviously didn't work out the way that he wanted, he gave America a great gift, because he exposed Gavin Newsom for, I know you've interviewed him a bunch of times, for what I believe the snake that he is. He is deeply dishonest. He is authoritarian. He loved the lockdowns while he was, you know, eating at, what was that restaurant up
in
that?
French Laundry.
French Laundry, yes. Thank you. I blocked out that whole part of my life. I can't even remember the restaurants anymore.
He has not.
And he would gladly, and guess what? He would gladly do it again. Somehow he got the homeless people off the streets of San Francisco when the Chinese president showed up. And then the day the Chinese president was gone, the homeless were back. So these are all problems that can be solved. But for whatever reason, and you'd have to ask him, he doesn't want to solve them.
I'm not going to get into the fight. I will just say that West Hollywood and the Valley are not ghost towns these days. There's still plenty of people there.
West Hollywood.
There are certainly plenty of problems.
Oh, yes, there's a lot of transient. Yes, I will admit there are a lot of
transient
drug
problems, but there are still plenty of people
in West Hollywood.
Yeah. Last week we had the Speaker of the Assembly for California, Robert Rivas, join us. And what he said about the state of our state got a lot of attention, especially with folks on the right. Here is some of that. I want you to respond.
You're not going to convince me that residents today are better off than they were a decade ago. And that's the problem, is we've got to do a much better job of focusing on how we can become more efficient, how our state government can be more effective when it comes to ensuring that the future of this state is secure.
And then I asked him, basically, who's to blame for this? And point out the fact that Democrats have been in control for both the governorship and supermajorities and all the rest of it. And he said, yeah, we do need some, you know, new leadership. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm curious, what's your take on all that?
Well, look, one of my calculations when I left California, which was on December 17th, 2021, a day I will never forget, was that nothing was going to turn around. I fought very hard to have the recall of Gavin Newsom, who locked people in their homes and all of the school closures and everything else and the restaurants and destroyed lives. You know, at many of the rallies that I went to during COVID, most of the people there in Los Angeles, you know, they're Hollywood people. They were Democrats who then got mugged by reality and suddenly were becoming, I don't know that they were becoming conservative, but they were suddenly becoming radically anti-Democrat or anti-Gavin Newsom. And Gavin Newsom, I think, represents largely what the Democrat Party of California has become. So I would say to anyone that wants to change things in California, good luck. But I don't think there's any evidence that any of it's going to turn around anytime soon.
you highlighted a moment from our show on your show recently. You showed a clip of Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary, playing the name game, where she had very positive things to say about the Democrats that she had worked for. Your guest at the time had a very different view, but we didn't hear your version of the name game. So we want to do this with you and give you an opportunity to play the name game. So this is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the name. All right, ready? Joe Biden.
Poop.
Jill Biden.
Evil.
Kamala Harris.
Confused.
Donald Trump.
All right.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Decent.
Barack Obama.
Snake.
Michelle Obama.
Mike.
John Kerry.
Free.
And Rachel Maddow.
The first word that came to my head was pencil.
Okay. Well,
it looks like a pencil.
Okay. We highlight very different perspectives here. So you got a very different take between Dave and Jen Psaki. I know you're going to be here with us in studio next month, which we're really looking forward to. And we may even be able to play some basketball on our hoop here at the station. I know you're a big basketball player, so that might be fun.
I would love to do that. Yeah. And it should be noted that I tried to go to the studio with you a couple of years ago when I still lived in Cali, if you remember. And they turned me back because I was not vaccinated. Yes. So we had to do it digitally. So it would be, but you did give me your mom's cookies, which were delicious, by the way.
Yes. Well, we'll have some waiting for you. And thankfully that stupid vaccine mandate is over and we'll be excited to have you in here. I disagreed with it at the time and I'm glad that it's finally over.
Our thanks to Dave Rubin. Also this week, we put out two other podcasts, one of them with Jordan Klepper from The Daily Show. The other was Senator Alex Padilla, who's got a very different view than what you just heard from Dave Rubin. We hope you will click on those as well. And also, you'll come back next week for more of The Issue Is.